A conversation with John Courtney, Republican candidate for Congress. From the State House in Augusta, I'm Keith Shortall. Today we continue our series of Your Vote 2012 candidate interviews. John Courtney's one of two Republicans vying for the party's nod to take on incumbent Democrat Shelley Pingree for Maine's 1st Congressional District seat this fall. Courtney, who makes his home in the southern Maine community of Springvale, currently serves as Senate Majority Leader in the legislature. He cites the economy, job creation, lower taxes, and less government spending among his priorities in Augusta. Join the conversation. Email questions to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. A conversation with John Courtney, Republican for Congress. This is MaineCalling. And John Courtney, welcome to the program. Let's start with the first question, which is why do you think you're the best candidate to take on Shelley Pingree this fall?
Well, I think that I've worked for the last 10 years in the legislature. I've had the opportunity to help craft a message that resonates with the people of Maine, that share their values, and we've been able to take that message, create promises and fulfill them. And it's something that you don't see a lot happening in Washington today. So I would like to take those skills and bring them down to Washington.
And as you know, the 1st District is traditionally relatively more liberal than the 2nd District. And Democrats have had a lot of success down south. Is that a concern to you? Or how do you get at that?
Well, I think it is. It's certainly a concern, but one of the things to remember, it's not an entitlement that the Democrats own the 1st District. It is every 2 years it's up for re-election, and I believe that we've shown that we can work across the aisle and we can do things differently than they do in Washington. I don't think it's good enough to go to Washington and sit in your corner and not be part of the solution. I think there's too much of that going down there. Congress is approval ratings in the single digits, and I think the people of Maine deserve more. They deserve someone that will go down there and fight for them every single day.
And to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post a message on our Facebook page. And we're going to actually go to our Facebook page, and Deborah has a question for you. Maine workers continue to struggle with unemployment and a stagnant job market. I was laid off from my job 16 months ago and struggled to find work with a living wage. Maine continues to have the lowest per capita income in New England with a rising class of underemployed Mainers. What's your plan to bring good-paying, sustainable jobs to Maine? And to that effort, do you support raising the minimum wage?
Well, first of all, the problem that we've faced in Maine is that we're always at the beginning of the recession, and we're at the tail end of the recovery. And we've tried in the last 2 years, we've tried to change a course of the last 40 years that would reduce the cost of doing business in Maine, to create those good jobs, with our work on regulatory reform, our reduction in our tax reform. I think that we've made some strong progress in the last 2 years, and and there's much more to do, but it will take a little bit of time for those policies to go into effect. The real issue, though, with the national economy, we want to make sure that when the people make decisions whether you're going to invest good jobs in invest to create good jobs in the state, that we are competitive with other parts of the country. With regards to the minimum wage, I don't think that's just an artificial number. That's not driven. That doesn't create any jobs. That just what it does. It takes a big piece of pie and people start shrinking it up and to get smaller and smaller pieces. The best thing we can do is to try to attract good companies to create good jobs and so we can tell the story across the country that we value good employers. And that's what we've tried to do in my time in the legislature, and I believe we're on track to begin that.
And when you say good employers, they're often referred to in this debate about taxes as the job creators. And another listener wants to know if you support the Buffett rule, which is a minimum 30% tax rate on the highest earners.
Well, the best thing that we could do with regards to the Buffett suggestion is let Warren Buffett keep his own money. If Warren Buffett can do more to help this country by investing and creating jobs than he ever could do by writing a check to the government. The United States government has a spending problem. There's plenty of money going into the United States government. You look at some of the misuses of money, the weekend in Las Vegas, the conferences, the excessive spending. It's just unconscionable. And to send more money to the federal government is just simply not the answer.
Would you support lower federal income taxes across the board?
I think what we need to do is we need to have tax reform. I think we need to have a comprehensive look at the entire tax code so that it's fairer and it's simpler. But I believe that the best way to turn this economy around is for more people to have money in their pockets.
1-800-399-3566. John Courtney, Senate Majority Leader in the Maine Legislature, candidate for Congress in the 1st District. One of the big concerns for Mainers, even though it's nice and sunny today, it wasn't that long ago that it was cold, and a lot of folks are probably now writing the checks for some of their oil bills. What can Congress do, if anything, to lower the cost of energy for Maine people?
Sure. Well, I'm very disappointed in the president and the Congress this last winter when the people of Maine were hurting. They turned their back, president turned his back on the people of Maine with regards to low-income heating assistance. We memorialized the president in the state Senate and the House restore funding for the low-income heating assistance. We asked them to look for other sources of energy by moving the Keystone Pipeline on the fast track. We tried to offer some suggestions from the state level to the administration, but they turned their back on us. And I think that that's sad because there's so many people in need in Maine. And, you know, it's everybody. It's not just the low income. It's not the middle income. It's everybody in the state is struggling trying to pay these high-priced gas and oil bills. You know, driving on the turnpike the other day, it's over $4 a gallon for gasoline. That takes money. That means that, you know, somebody can't go out to eat or somebody has to turn the heat down in their house. And that really is a travesty to the people of Maine.
Let's bring in some of the callers from Wells. Linda is on the line. Hi, Linda. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call.
Good morning.
Good morning. Senator Courtney sponsored a resolution in favor of the Keystone Pipeline. So I'd like to know how you feel about the possibility of Enbridge, the Enbridge reversal, that would bring the same corrosive tar sands oil through Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. Are you aware of Enbridge?
I think that with today's technology, we don't have to make a choice between having energy and the environment. One of the first things we did this last session, I was the chairman of the Regulatory Reform Commission, and we went across the state looking for answers for what the concerns were about regulatory reform. There were many concerns from the environmental community that this was going to be an assault on the environment. I was able to work with the members of the committee, and we were able to get a unanimous committee report and actually passed it through the House and the Senate almost unanimously. I think we only had a couple of votes against it in the House. And we sent a strong message with that you don't have to sacrifice the environment in order to have a good, strong economy.
With all due respect, the Enbridge pipeline is 70 years old. It wasn't designed for the corrosive chemicals and the corrosive tar sands. It's not even oil. It's tar mixed with sand. And what about the Kalamazoo spill? That happened with Enbridge a year and a half ago. They have not been able to clean it up. People in that area are all getting sick. Children are getting sick. And this pipeline goes to Portland. It goes right next to Sebago Lake. Do you want to take that kind of risk?
I think that with today's technology, we absolutely can have both. We can.
That's 70 years old.
Yeah, Linda, let the candidate answer, please. Thanks.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I believe truly with today's technology, we need to look at all opportunities for energy. I've also been a strong supporter of alternative energy, but we also need to make sure that alternative energy is at a competitive cost moving forward. I can understand subsidizing something for the short term, but for the long term, we need to make sure that it's affordable. One of the biggest travesties that I see in the world today is that because we don't produce enough oil in North America to have an impact on the global market, we are at the dependence of the people in the Middle East. And frankly, I'd like to see the day come that when the oil from the Middle East is worth no more than the sand that it sits under.
Would you support offshore drilling off the coast of Maine if there was oil there?
I don't think off the immediate coast, but I would out a certain distance. But again, we'd have to be confident that we have the technology that will preserve the environment, and that has to be first and foremost with regards to that.
Do you support nuclear power?
I think nuclear power has been successful across the country. I think much of Europe is dependent on it. It's actually cleaner than if your concern is the air you breathe. I think it's much cleaner. So I think you have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. But I wouldn't close the door to anything. I don't see how we can. When people are trying to struggle to pay the bills at the end of each week, I mean, Keith, you just mentioned that people are signing those checks for the oil delivery last month, and we just can't turn our back on them like the administration has done.
The big problem with nuclear, of course, has been the waste and what to do with it. The only problem. There are concerns about safety as well, as we've seen. But so what do we do with that waste?
Well, I think that the technology today is very different than it was 20 years ago or 40 years ago when actually I think the last nuclear plant was built in this country. So I think that I don't have all of the answers on this, but I certainly want to look and listen to the scientists and listen to the experts, and let's find a way. If we're to move forward, that has to be part of the discussion, is how we deal with the waste.
1-800-399-3566. John Courtney, Senate Majority Leader in the Maine Legislature, candidate for Congress in Maine's 1st District, to Portland and Delia. Hi, Delia. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead, please.
So I was just wondering, Senator Courtney, if you personally support a woman's right to choose and if you would defend that position in Congress.
No, I am pro-life. I have a personal view that I have always had. I will say that I understand many people have a view different than I do, and certainly understand and respect that view. I think what's most important is that we try to make sure that that choice never has to be made, and I would hope that that can happen. I understand that's not always the case, but I have a fundamental personal belief, but I have sincere respect for people that have other points of view.
Yeah,
and just as a follow-up, in Congress, you would support the pro-life position on a lot of these measures that have come up in the last couple of years?
I will take every measure individually. I'm not locked into – I think that's one of the unique things about sending me to Congress is I'm not going to vote some party line just because somebody says it. And if you look at the last couple of years of the last 4 years of our representative, I think that you would see that they're very much in line and even to the left of the majority of their party. So I am not locked into any specific position. I will vote each issue on its merits. I will listen to both sides of each issue, but I do have a personal principle that is for me it's pro-life.
Bethany writes on Facebook, the Obama administration is supporting birth control for women, even if they work for a religious organization that doesn't support birth control or abortions. Does Mr. Courtney agree with Mr. Obama on this?
It's another one of those difficult issues. I think that the concern about should the government be able to tell an employer what they have to cover or what they can't cover, especially when the employer is a religious institution that it's against their religion. So you're forcing someone to violate a premise of their religion to do that. So I think that's a tough call. I will say one thing, though. It's easy to get caught up in these social issues. I think we all have very strong personal beliefs, and I respect my belief. People that believe like me, I respect people that have very different beliefs. But we need to also remember what we're doing today in Washington is absolutely not working. The policies of this administration in the last few years are destroying our country. We have spending that is out of control. We have the amount of debt. When you start to look, it's over $50,000 a person in this country for that debt. What kind of legacy are we leaving our kids unless we really try to get at this and get this under control? So.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions, share your thoughts, email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, post a comment on our Facebook page, or call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our guest today, John Courtney, Senate Majority Leader in the Maine Legislature and a candidate for Congress in Maine's 1st District. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with journalist Matt Apuzzo, part of the Associated Press's investigative team that just won a Pulitzer Prize for revealing the New York Police Department's clandestine spying program that monitored daily life in Muslim communities. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock.
Paul Weller's new CD is called Sonic Kicks. I'm Sarah Willis. Join me tonight on Intune by 10. New music from Paul Weller and more here on MPBN Radio.
Oh, my loved ones look long into the night. Your dad is gone with only for a while. In that darkness.
Broadcast of Your Vote 2012 Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine with offices in Portland and Blue Hill, by Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine, the happiest people in business, Garand.com, and by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/ME.
And welcome back. This is a Your Vote 2012 conversation on Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we're speaking with John Courtney, Republican candidate for Maine's 1st Congressional District. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. Affordable Care Act. A good idea, a bad idea, needs changed.
Well, I think the Affordable Care Act has been a failure. I understand the intent of it, the intent to provide more health insurance to people, and it's a intent that we've tried to do in the Maine Senate and the Maine House. But I am really concerned about the government-run health care program that, frankly, has taken money from Medicare and has no cost controls. And if you look at the cost going out, it's exponential. And we need to make sure that we get our arms around the cost. Requiring someone to buy health insurance, I think that should be a personal decision. And I think that portion has a chance of being struck down by the Supreme Court. The real issue, what I'd like to see, is not just repeal, but replace. Replace it with market-based reforms. Replace it with, so do some of the things like we've done in Maine. What some of the things we've done, we've tried to create guaranteed access plans for the sickest in small groups, try to allow us to buy health insurance across state lines. One of the things, you ought to be able to go online and pull up health insurance, Google health insurance, and you ought to be able to buy your health insurance. And it should be that simple, and it isn't. And we need to find a way to make that simpler for people, and it will and make sure that it's affordable so people can afford it, because it has become unaffordable today. Especially in Maine.
You mentioned Medicare. I want to throw in Social Security. They often get lumped together sometimes. What do you feel about privatization and or means testing as a way to lower cost?
Well, I think means testing, I think people have paid in and with an expectation that they're going to get that out. And as for privatization, obviously there was an effort to privatize a few years ago, and had that happened, it probably would have been not very good with you look at the downturn of the markets. However, we need to look at all things on Social Security so it will be around for when I go to collect it, and people in my generation, I'm 45 years old, and frankly, it won't be there if we continue to operate it the same way. So we need to really take a long, hard look at it. We need people in Washington that will make the tough decisions, that they'll say, listen, you know, you're 45 years old, you might not get to retire at 67, it might be 69. You need to make these long-term decisions. And I'll tell you something, the sooner you make those decisions, the less harsh they are, because they compound so great over the number of years.
1-800-399-3566, the number to join the conversation with John Courtney. 1-800-399-3566. Let's go to Portland and Pam. Hi, Pam.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Good afternoon.
Thanks. I wanted to follow up on the senator's answer to the question about the Buffett rule, and as you seem to place a lot of stock in the bounce the economy will get if Warren Buffett keeps more of his own money, but how is that going to work? I mean, it seems like Warren Buffett, who has, you know, money into the stratosphere, is begging the federal government to take some back, because he and others in his, you know, very elite group have just reaped so many of the benefits of the last, you know, 20 years or so. And, you know, we have the widest wealth gap in the country today than we've had since the 1920s. So when I hear Warren Buffett make that call, it seems to me he's begging the federal government to have some vision. You know, how are we ever going to build another, you know, interstate highway system or something really big if we're more concerned about, you know, the wealthiest among us keeping more wealth in their pockets? This is what Warren Buffett is trying to say, I think, is that this is national wealth.
Yeah, let's let the senator.
Well, I appreciate the question, because I share some of the same frustrations. In my business, every year there's a little less going to the bottom line, and I understand that frustration. But I don't believe that you know, Warren Buffett giving me more money is going to solve that. I believe that a better, stronger economy is going to solve that. And I understand the frustration, and that is the easy way out. The easy way out is to create this culture of a class warfare, and Warren Buffett could write a check to the federal government, and it won't even make a dent in the deficit. It won't make a dent in our opportunity to create more opportunity. What will create more opportunity is if we get people like Warren Buffett that are intent on investing in the economy, investing in creating jobs, investing in the next generation. And I believe that Warren Buffett can do better with that money than the United States government.
Is there room to talk about you know, increasing the tax rate on capital gains?
I don't believe that increasing the tax rate on capital gains is a good idea. I think that there again, you have people that have, you know, worked their lives to earn that money. It's a double taxation in many cases. So I think that we need to be very cautious about that. But I think a discussion, though, is long overdue at the federal level to have a simplified tax system, a simplified system that everybody can understand. Probably the accountants won't like it very much because they won't make as much money. But I think that we need to make it, we ought to really have one-stop shopping. You Google the federal government. You can buy your health insurance. You can file your taxes. It just needs to be simple. And I think that if we simplify a lot of these things, I truly believe that we can move this country forward again.
Let's go to Naples and Herb. Hi, Herb. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have two quick questions. One, I wanted to know if you've signed the Grover Norquist pledge not to raise taxes. And two, if you understand the anthropogenic causes of global warming.
Two separate issues there. Let's do the taxes first, Senator.
Okay. I have not signed the Grover Norquist pledge. I have been consistently opposed to increasing taxes in my time in the legislature. I think my record speaks for itself, and I don't believe I need to sign a pledge that that somebody else can interpret. So I think that my record speaks for itself.
And the second part is, go ahead, Herb.
Sign it. Excuse me, you don't plan to sign it in the future.
I haven't really thought about it that much. I've seen it once, but that's not my intent right now.
Okay.
Issue two was about whether global warming is man-made. First of all, whether you believe in global warming, and then secondly, whether it is, if it's man-made.
Well, I'm like probably the average person on Main Street. You hear both extremes. I think there's probably a little bit to do with both. So I think, obviously, we need to do everything we can to protect our environment, but we need to do it in a way that we don't burden our citizens so much that they lose the American dream. They lose the opportunity to earn a living. And I think you can have balance. As I mentioned earlier, we went across the state with our Regulatory Reform Commission, and because we truly believe the best answers come from Main Street, not in Augusta or Washington. And we listened to the people of Maine loud and clear, and they came forth and they said, do not hurt our environment. And I firmly believe that that is a premise of the state of Maine, and we should not hurt the environment, but people must never have to put up with a second-class economic status to live here in Maine. And for too long, the people of Maine have done that, and it's time, and it's begun to change, and it's time to change that.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Back to Portland, and Robert. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call.
Good afternoon.
In the 1950s and the 1960s, the maximum tax rate on millionaires was 50, 60, 70, in some cases as much as 90%. That was the time when we had our greatest economic expansion. That was when the middle class was largest, and we had the most growth in the company and the country. We've had the whole idea of trickle-down economics for 30 years. We've had the idea of we've had the Bush tax cuts for 7 years. Everybody on the Republican side keeps saying, you know, it's going to trickle down. We've been waiting 30 years. How much longer do we have to wait for tax cuts to work? Because they haven't. They haven't produced the jobs. What are you going to do differently than the other Republicans that are down in Congress who are responsible for Congress's tax rate being, or Congress's approval rate being 9%?
Well,
back to the tax theory again first, and then I do want to touch on what's happening in Congress. And the reasons that Senator Snow cited for her exit.
Sure. I don't believe that the government can handle your money better than you can. I don't believe that in most cases, I think the government, if you look at the excessive spending, you look at the lack of how they care about your dollars, I believe people can make better choices with their money. I believe government is there to protect those that are most in need, and I think that we need to do that. And the national defense, obviously, is a top priority, but I don't believe that. I will say one thing. The premise of the question that Republicans or Democrats are Republicans are it's the fault of the Republicans. That is one of the reasons that I'm running. Olympia Snow left Congress because she was frustrated that both sides of the aisle were not they wouldn't talk to each other. And one of the things I've been able to do in the Maine legislature, I've got some really good friends on the other side of the aisle. And we may fight. We'll argue and debate, but when it's all done, we had a passionate debate the other day on the floor of the Senate. And I went over to my friend across the aisle, and I said, there's a terrific debate. I give him a hug, and then we go back, and we fought on the next issue. But there's a matter of civility that is not in Washington today that we need. And the people of Maine deserve better. And you can't just try and bring people together if you sit over in a corner and just repeat your views. You have to listen to the other side, and that's one of the things I'm going to do. I'm going to go down, and I'm going to listen to the other side. And I'm going to make sure that the people of Maine are represented in an honorable way.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
I'm John Harwood. Coming up on the next On Point, unseasonably warm temperatures across the country, tornadoes in the Great Plains, hail in Texas. What's going on? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Join us for On Point tonight at midnight. Broadcast of Your Vote 2012 Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN Radio listener contributions and by Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine with offices in Portland and Blue Hill, by Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine, the happiest people in business, Garand.com, and by AARP, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/ME. Join us after Maine Calling today for Speaking in Maine. We'll head to Portland and the University of Southern Maine Law School for a talk by Unity Dow, author, human rights activist, and former judge, who was the first woman to serve on Botswana's High Court. She delivers the University of Maine School of Law's annual Justice for Women lecture. That's Speaking in Maine, immediately following Maine Calling, at 1 o'clock this afternoon on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, a Your Vote 2012 conversation with John Courtney, Republican for Congress. Call 1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Email talk@mpbn.net, post to our Facebook page, or tweet at Maine Calling. I want to touch on free trade. Big subject, but I'm going to be a quick question. Are we doing what we should be doing? What would you change about our overall free trade policy?
Well, I support the concept of free trade, but it needs to be fair. And if people aren't playing by the same rules, then we need to really evaluate that. And so it's very simple for me. If it's going to be free trade, it needs to be free trade, but you do have to play by the same rules.
Let's go now to Steve in Portland. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of questions or comments about the ACA the senator mentioned earlier. Most credible economic analysis, particularly the CBO, has said that the keeping costs down was actually something that the ACA would do.
ACA is the Affordable Care Act you're referring to.
Yes, correct. Yes.
Yes.
There have also been, I would like to comment on the main legislation that's passed. So far, that has shown that rural areas actually end up paying more for their health insurance. And so I wouldn't exactly call those changes to recently passed in the legislature as being a benefit to Mainers. A comment about Social Security. Most just about every credible analysis of the Social Security system shows that for the next 75 years, it is pretty stable. There are some tweaks that would need to be made, but it is by no means in danger of not providing. I guess I'll take whatever comments offline. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Great. Well, I appreciate the question. I think that the CBO, I haven't seen the CBO estimate that it keeps costs down. However, it doesn't seem to make sense, because what I'm hearing is that the cost of the program is billions and billions of dollars more than initially projected when it was passed, even to the extent that I believe that the president had said at one point before he signed it that if it was that high, he would not have signed it. So I think that certainly, I'm not sure about the premise of the argument. With regards to the health insurance and the PL90, if you look at the Gorham report, you'll see that there's a tremendous statewide benefit. You do bring up a point about the rural areas, and we just passed a bill that will try to address that, and it was signed into law. Actually, I sponsored it, because one of the things that we did in the Maine legislature this last 2 years that they don't do in Washington is that if something needed to be fixed, we're willing to go and try and fix it. Now, contrast that to the Dirigo plan that was passed several years ago, where there wasn't an effort to adapt it to the market and adapt it to bringing buy-in. So we were able to pass this bill this session, and it got unanimous support, and it should deal with some of the very few people in the state that have seen some changes. But this, and with the full implementation of the state health care proposal that we've worked on, there should be even additional benefits, especially additional benefits specifically to rural areas, because they create incentives to for people in rural areas to use highly qualified hospitals, and that should make the hospitals more competitive and drive down cost. The final comment, and I'm glad I took notes, the final comment on the Social Security is stable for the next 75 years. I'd love to know where you get your numbers, because I wish you'd stayed on, because I haven't heard that anywhere. And if that's the case, that would be wonderful. We could move on to the next challenge that we face in government, but I don't believe that that's accurate.
All right, we've got some more calls on the health care issue, which is a big issue. Let's go to Kenny Bunkport and Alex. Hi, Alex. Welcome to the program.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Are you surprised to be with us?
Good afternoon, Alex.
Good afternoon. There are 18 countries. You mentioned that we couldn't afford health insurance. There are 18 countries in the world that have universal health care, one sort or another, which puts America fairly far down in that ability to take care of its people. One of the reasons that so many nations have done it is that it's very popular, and arguments that it is not popular are just plain wrong. Otto von Bismarck installed health care in Germany, which is the same program they still have, in order to entice the Prussian states to join his unified Germany. Now, there is none of those 18 countries, many of them use insurance, private insurance, as a way of handling the money, but in every single one of them, the insurance companies are prohibited from making a profit on the basic plan. Secondly, they, depending on the country, are limited to 3 or 4% overhead allowances. It's very doubtful with our court system and history of litigation that we could ever get away with forcing insurance companies to do this. The profit of insurance companies is from the healthcare system now is essentially the same as the difference per capita between the English healthcare costs and ours. So,
Alex, I hate to rush you, but I'm just wondering, is there a, can you sort of sum up your final thought?
The point is that we have to eliminate the profit of the insurance companies. And if they don't want to function in a nonprofit way for their basic health care property, basic health care program, then we can have a program that doesn't include insurance companies. That is the elephant in the room. That's why it is so much more expensive in this country.
Let's let the senator respond.
Okay. Well, thank you for the question. I think in the comments, because I think that listening to your comments, I think we share something in common. We share the feeling that everybody ought to be able to afford health insurance. They ought to be able to get health insurance simply, and they should be able to afford it. And I totally agree with that. I think it's a little bit challenged is that to suggest that the healthcare system's broken because of the health insurance profits. That might be a nice soundbite, and it might sound good on a campaign slogan, but it doesn't address the problem. The real problem is the cost of healthcare. In Maine, there actually is a law that limits the amount of profit that Anthem or any of these health insurance companies can have. So I think that we need to look at that. We need to make sure, though, that the cost of health care is looked at. We need to make sure we have the best health care possible as well. As far as universal health care, where nobody worries about how to pay for it, you don't have to go any further than across the border in Canada to look at their health care system. And in most cases, if you have a major surgery or a major issue with health care, you have to wait in line. Or maybe have to pay extra to come over to the United States to get quality health care. And I remember my grandmother lived in Kingston, Ontario, and I remember going to a nursing home a little bit before she was about to pass on. And I remember seeing those conditions, and it was just disgraceful. And it's something that we wouldn't accept in the United States of America. So we need to, number one, be very proud of the health care system that we have. We have some good, high-qualified people, but it doesn't come without a cost. And we need to make sure that we inject some competition. So, when you go and get your health care, you don't think, most people, if they have insurance, they don't think about the cost. But I was one that had to have that high deductible when my kids were young. And I had to pay, my son had a serious illness, and I had to go and pay the, $5,000 deductible and make the payments on it to pay that off. And he got the best care, and he's with us today because we were fortunate enough to be able to do that. But nothing is for free, and you need to look at the cost as well, and we need to address that. But I really share the view that everybody ought to be able to purchase health insurance.
All right. John Courtney, thank you much for joining us today.
Thank you.
John Courtney, Republican candidate for Maine's 1st Congressional District. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer Scott McAuliffe answered your calls. Lindsay Maynard ran the board, and we had additional help from the MPBN web team. You can listen to this conversation and previous editions of the show by visiting mpbn.net. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.